From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. This is one of my favorite albums of 2015. It's by an artist you may not know, yet I'm hoping you'll fall in love with it like I did. Her name is Bridie Mons Watson, better known as Soak. Her debut album is called Before We Forgot How to Dream. Soak is 19 years old now, but 14 when she wrote this song called Sea Creatures. Songs on this record are atmospheric and they're delicate. I'm fascinated by the sound on the album, not at all what I imagined from an Irish singer with a guitar. It's so much more complex than that. I asked Soak to play DJ on this edition of All Songs Considered and to play the song she loves. And I'll in turn play some of the music I love that she makes. Some of her inspiration was growing up around parents who encouraged artistic expression.
My mom's an artist. My mom used to teach art, and she taught photography and a whole pile of things. So she's an incredible artist. And my big brother's an artist as well. So It's kind of like a family thing, I guess. And when we were younger, we were always kind of, like, my mom always kind of was like, express yourself through doing something positive or creating something instead of breaking things and that. So, yeah, we just always drew a lot of different things.
And musically, your folks play music? I mean, they're artistic, they make music, or they play music as in records around the house?
Both. My dad doesn't record or anything, but when he was younger, like my age, he was in bands locally, like in Belfast when the Troubles were going on and stuff. There's quite a tight-knit group of people that just did loads of bands and stuff. So he was in them, and he's been playing since then to now, so he's like the most amazing guitarist. Like, he's pretty cool. And then my mom doesn't, when I started playing guitar when I was like 13, my mom, my parents were still together at this point, and I remember going into their room and I was showing them that I could play Stairway to Heaven, and my mom was like, oh, I can play that. And I was like, okay, right, here's the guitar. And she fucked it up, and like, I don't even know what she played, but like, oh, she could not play guitar at all. And we just sat and laughed at her for so long. She was like, it was like a movie scene where she was singing along and she was like really out of tune.
And it wasn't the song.
It was so funny. Well, it was the song. It just wasn't... It was hard to tell it was the song. But yeah. And then other than that, like, my parents have always played like loads and loads of music. So my parents, when I was really young, and me and my brothers, we lived in the country, and they both work in mental health. So They had like 24-hour shifts and stuff, and sometimes in the weekends, like, one of them would work overnight and the other one would look after us. So I, like, the earliest kind of memories of music I have is like being 3 years old and in the living room, and my parents are quite hippie-ish, and like running around the living room, like playing that The Floor Is Lava game, but like really aggressively to like some Mozart music. And my parents would play that, and like when it would get really like scary, I guess, and like depthy, we'd just go crazy. And then like at night time, my dad would play like Sweet Baby James Does by James Taylor. So right. Yeah.
Wow.
It had a lot
That's quite
of music.
A variety.
Yeah.
Tell me something that you picked up on. Let's play something that you picked. Tell me something that early on struck you as music that you could kind of call your own, maybe.
My parents have always like played a lot of Pink Floyd for us, and even I've been told that when I was in the womb they played Echoes, like the Whale song. We've always called it the whale song.
Yeah, the cut from Metal. That's Meddle. It's about 18 minutes long on the.
Yeah, it's crazy. And they've played like loads of Pink Floyd, so I'd pug Fearless by Pink Floyd. That's off Metal as well.
I'd love to play Fearless.
Yeah.
Here we go. The music you make has so much sort of texture going on inside of it, and when I was listening to this song, Metal, which is, if we can do the math right, is, I don't know, 40, came out in 71, so it's 44 years old, frightening.
Yeah.
Do you think that the music and textures that you hear in something like Pink Floyd interests you enough to put that sort of stuff into the music you make?
I know when I was younger, when I heard this, I was like, I want to make music like this. And I still feel like that.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I think it's definitely like something that's a constant inspiration when I hear it.
I'm going to play something of yours for people who don't know your music well.
Trying hard to make something of what we are. I am trapped between the main blanket and new sheet.
When did you go from like hearing your parents make music to picking up, I assume maybe picking up one of their guitars to make?
The first time I ever touched a guitar was when I was like, I think 5. And what happened was, so my dad's played guitar for a very long time.
Yeah.
And always since I've been alive. So he always had acoustic guitars lying around and stuff. And I remember like just not knowing what the tuning pegs did and like just really like twisting them until like, and then one of the strings broke and I was like, oh, ran away. So that was the first time I kind of like, not played, but like, you know,
made
any sort of relation to one. And then originally I really wanted drums when I was about 10, and I never got them. But my best friend who lived next door, and is still my best friend, Jack, he's more interested in music now than he ever was before. And he wasn't very, like, he didn't really care for music. Our favourite song, I think, at that point was Crazy Frog. Do you remember that?
No.
No? I'll
wait,
introduce
minute.
You.
I need, well, it's...
Like, look it up, it's, yeah. But it's like... Goes ding, 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 ding. It's like Crazy Frog. Ding, ding, ding. It's almost like... Oh, it's similar to the song that's out now, actually, but it's one of them really annoying children's kind of songs that does well and is on radio. It's horrendous, like... That was our big song at that point in time, then.
What's going on?
Bing, bing. Skip the light halfway through. Yeah, like...
Now we're talking.
If you played this in a kid's disco, people would lose their minds.
There is a frog tumbling from a building.
Yep.
Yeah,
this
yep.
Is
so it's you and Jack.
So me and my best friend Jack, this was our big tune at that point in time. And then around this time I was like, I really want drums. I want to play drums. I'm not sure exactly what made me be like,
oh,
I want them.
I mean.
Potentially that. Sweet beat. But yeah, so I wanted them, and then Jack was like, you know, when you're that age and you want everything your friend has.
Yeah.
And we, like, this stage we both had everything that each other had, and we were just like really, really good pals. And I was like, I want drums. So he was like, I'm gonna get drums too. And I never got mine. My parents were like, too loud, sorry. And he got his, and he played them for maybe 2 weeks and then gave up.
Oh no.
I know. But and the same Christmas my big brother got given a guitar. And he learned dun, 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 Smoke in the Water,
yeah.
Is that?
Yeah, yeah. You went fast on that.
Sorry.
It would be more like bam, bam, bam.
Yeah.
Threw me off at the bass. But yes.
Yeah, but he learned that and then gave up. And it was like this really bad Wesley guitar.
Uh-huh.
Nothing against Wesley, but it's the only one I've played, and it was not good. So he did that, and then I was kind of jealous and was like, teach me how to play that. And that's whenever I read my first ever tab, like a tablature. It was like top, it says something like really dodgy writing, like top string 350 open, I don't know. But it was like, and from that I just learned how to play Smoke in the Water.
So for people who don't know what the tablature is, it's a...
Tablature is like 6 lines, one line for each guitar, and then they're kind of like, there's all the frets are put into different like sections, and then a little circle on each line on each fret to mark where your finger should be.
Right, and that'll help you play it.
And that's how you learn a song.
Right.
Kind of like piano music, I guess.
It's,
I don't know what's
that called. It's easier note-wise for
it's better than sheet music,
right,
I guess.
Right.
And then from there I was like, I showed my dad. My dad was like, how did you learn how to do that? I was like, well, Egan taught me. And
uh-huh.
Egan's my brother.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like, teach me how to play something, I want to do this. And he was really excited because he was like, oh, your brother gave up and I really want someone to play guitar because it's my big thing. So he taught me Everybody Hurts by R.E.M.
Mm-hmm.
Or Everyone Hurts.
Yeah.
One of them. And that was the first ever song I learned how to play.
Well, let's play just a tiny bit of it, right?
Yeah, do it.
Chords.
D, G, A maybe? I can still play.
The day is long and the night is yours alone. sure you've had enough of this life. Well, hang on. Don't let yourself go.
Did you also learn to sing it? Did you do that?
I mumbled.
Yeah.
Definitely at this point. And yeah. And then after the song, that's when I learned Stairway to Heaven.
Wow.
Yeah. And yeah, those were like the first kind of foundation songs, I guess, that my dad taught me.
Smoke on the Water, Stairway to Heaven. And pretty much you got to get those down, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's probably, I guess this must be a lot of other people's like first songs.
I would have thought that we'd go somewhere, not you and I, but I mean, just in terms of like what people's first songs were, I would think it would change from 1970s rock songs somewhere in the year 2000 or
yeah, probably a lot of people
2010,
know that,
but I wonder what
first
they are.
First song I learned was Ariana Grande.
What about some other music that you love? Let's say, could it be maybe the first thing either? Do people buy music?
Yeah, we have, where I live, we've got this really cool record store called Cool Discs.
And where is that exactly?
It's on a place called Foyle Street in Derry.
You're in Derry, right?
Yeah, Derry, yeah. Northern Ireland. Yeah. And they're really nice. There's a guy, Lee, who runs the place, and they've been incredible supporters of my music forever since I started doing it, and was like handing them really dodgy, like, kind of demo CDs with terrible, like, pixelated photos in the front, and yeah, like they're really cool. I remember when I first got paid for a gig, the gig didn't pay that much, but I brought a lot of CDs and we sold out of them and I made like 100 quid or something, and I went to Cool Discs and I bought loads and loads of CDs. This was whenever people bought CDs, I guess, and I was trying to teach myself a lot about older music to impress my dad and other people. I was also, there was an element of that, and then it was also like, that looks cool, I'm just gonna buy that based on the album cover, which is an interesting kind of thing to do. Yeah, like I got Biffy Clyro, is it Revolutions, the one with the flags in the front?
I don't know.
You don't know Biffy Clyro?
No.
No. Well, they're a Scottish band.
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
They're pretty good though. You'll probably
play,
like,
play me.
Yeah.
What should I play?
They're a really big band over in Europe and the UK.
Spell it.
Biffy Clyro. Probably.
Oh, I can easily see why I'd buy this by the cover. Oh my gosh, this beautiful like tree sideways. It looks both electrical and it looks...
Oh, that must be their new... Opposites.
Do you remember which any of these covers are
so
the one?
So see the one, Only Revolutions?
Yeah.
That's the one I bought whenever I was younger.
Can you describe that cover at all to people?
It's like, it's a person and they're like carrying, was it one or two flags? And they're like flapping in the wind and the flags are huge. And one of them's red and one of them's blue, I think.
How about we just play the opening cut called The Captain?
Yeah. Oh, good song.
Somebody help me say, whoa, 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 whoa.
It's time for surprises. I can't climb up your ladder. I can't ride your horse. I've swallowed half an hourglass. Tonight the landscape is swollen up. I give birth to a fire. It's like this creature's.
Well, I like this. Great to be turned on to something I don't know. Biffy Clyro.
Listen to that entire album. You'll like it.
I love going into record stores in the days that I would go more into record stores and buy things by album cover.
Yeah.
It's great to know that people still do it.
Yeah. It's a really exciting thing to do.
It
it's
is.
Like you have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, and then you're committed, right?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not like, yeah, whatever. You really do spend time with it because you've plopped money down for it. So what else did you, get anything else that day?
On that trip, I bought whatever Pink Floyd albums I didn't have or I hadn't stolen from my parents, and that, and a few other things, I'm sure. But on that trip, I remember looking at Bon Iver for Emma forever ago.
And we call him Bon Iver.
Bon Iver, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember it was like, that song is, I think, less than 10 tracks, and it was pretty expensive compared to most of the CDs, so I was like, why is this so fancy? And I bought it, and it was probably one of my favorite albums ever, and definitely inspired me to write a lot of music similar to that, I think.
Wow.
Just in his lyrics, and just in even how he records and everything is quite special.
What year do you think this record trip was? Or how old were you?
15, maybe.
15. Yeah, okay. Let's play, what do you want to play from?
I think Flume.
Great.
It's a good one.
It's more than just the song. You lay down an atmosphere in your music that is related to the song, sometimes contrast to the song, sometimes. And Justin Vernon, Bon Iver, easily did that. And such a stunning song Flume is from forever, forever ago.
Yeah.
Is there a song, maybe that's it, but is there a song that you feel like more than anything made you take some sort of action, changed your life in some way?
I think definitely this entire record, like when I remember hearing like Skinny Love, which obviously the big song from that album, and I remember hearing that And I think that was before I bought the record.
You remember where you heard it? Was it at a friend's? Was it on the radio?
Pretty sure it was like searching through the depths of YouTube, trying to find like new music, I guess. Uh-huh. And I heard that and was just like, what is this? And I just remember hearing it and being like, this is how I want to write songs. And when I got that record, and around this time, like, I live like beside a huge river, and it's quite scenic. And around that time,
what's the river?
The Foyle, and it runs through the middle of the city. And I live near to the city, but it's big, but it's also quite small. If that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. The kind of route into town is past a lot of trees, and through a full winter, which is when I had this album, I was like doing a lot of like skateboarding, but just like going around parks like nearby, because it's quite dusky in the winter and it's cold, but it's not too cold, and it's quite dull and misty, and it's just amazing. And definitely around this time I remember doing a lot of like skating about the local park and across the bridge, and just a lot of kind of nighttime early morning stuff, like going to friends' houses across the river. I remember listening to this album a ton, and that's exactly what it reminds me of, is doing that and going to friends' houses and all those times. And I think definitely it just changed a lot of how I thought about things in his lyrics, just in how he talks about situations and his view of things. I think it definitely changed how I looked at things in a positive way, just in that he speaks of things that are so simple, so eloquently and so poetically, that it's quite inspiring to look at things in that way as well. Mm-hmm.
So you take the sort of everyday and the pedestrian and the so forth.
Yeah,
and,
it's like just simple small things aren't that small, I guess. Uh-huh. And to appreciate them.
Did you write a song when you hear this stuff make you want to write? Were you writing at all at that
Yeah,
that
I was
point?
Writing a lot. And I still have tons and tons of demos from that point in time. Uh-huh. And a lot of, like, stuff is not specifically, like, incredible songwriting or anything. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely a lot of lyrics in there that say a lot of things. That's when I kind of started writing exactly as I write now. And
how would you describe that?
I write in a way that I don't sit down and force myself to write, because if I could do it, but I wouldn't, there wouldn't be too much heart in it. And for me, songwriting has always been my way of, like, I would talk about things without talking about things. So I would sit down, I would sing and play, and everything that I said I would write down. And when it was in front of me, I could understand it so much more better and what I was trying to say, and I could just figure it out from there. And then after that, I would kind of just turn it into a song by what it was written in front of me, like, this is a verse, this is a chorus, and that would be it. And I didn't pay too much thought to the songs. Like, that would be, I would finish it in an hour, and that was it. And then I'd demo it, because I just loved recording, like, terrible demos with, like, £5 microphones that went straight into USB. Like, that's why I loved doing it at that point, and I spent a lot of time doing it.
Where are those? Are they out there?
I still have them. Like, they're not. I mean, I had it before, kind of, I guess, things picked up for me in industry, got involved in stuff. Like, I had a SoundCloud with loads of stuff on it, and I've definitely had about 4 YouTube channels that I forgot passwords to that are probably still existent. But yeah, I've got all the demos, like, on CDs and that.
Can we search for them?
Please don't.
Deal. Is there something from that time that you think on the current record that you feel might be representative of that, of this sort of moods or song style? Or
I'm actually an instrumental from the album. Third instrumental, the one closest to the end. Right. I think it's called If Everyone Is Someone, No One Is Everyone, which is a deep song title.
Thank you.
Tell me how these things sort of come about. The album, for those who don't know the record, starts with something that's atmospheric, amazing. My Brain Is It? And
yeah.
It goes into the opening track that we played early in the show. And interspersed in all the record is this tone, this mood. And where do these things come from? Do you make them in your bedroom?
Quite a few of those songs in that album were written over the years, and they weren't like, they're not all songs from whenever I was 18. They're like Sea Creatures, which is a song on the record I wrote when I was 14, and then there's songs Oh Brother I wrote when I was 18, and mm-hmm. everything in between. And a lot of them were demoed, and then some of the new ones were just Tommy, who's sitting in the little room beside us, recorded the entire record.
So Tommy is Tommy McLaughlin. He was the engineer at the club last night,
yep.
and then engineered also, obviously, your record. And at the Tiny Desk today,
which
you will hear and see sometime soon in the near, not too distant future.
Yeah, I definitely think if Tommy wasn't the one that worked with me on the record, it wouldn't sound the same. So that was important. And I think when we came in to kind of figure out exactly what tracks we were going to do in that, like, it was definitely dead set from the start that I wanted to have, like, intervals and musicals and all of it to flow smooth. Mm-hmm. So that's why those are there.
And did you make those in the studio with him, or these things? Yeah.
They're in the studio. It was like a lot of the three instrumentals, and they have recurring themes of like there's an overhead plane flying in a fountain and stuff in the background, but little instrument musical changes happen, like, and that's the final instrumental, and that's just before the end track, which flows kind of like that. I use them as kind of markers, so like the starting one, it's called My Brain because that's what I feel like my brain does, is it builds up, and then when you think it's going to explode, it doesn't, and it goes calm. So that's the first interval, and that leads you in. And then the middle one is kind of like, I see them as like, you get a break, you can think about what you just heard, but you're not on mute.
Mm-hmm.
And you're coming back to something you already know, because there's still parts of the song, of the little instrumentals, that are the same as the other instrumentals. But there's different melodies and stuff in there as well.
And that's A Dream to Fly.
A Dream to Fly, yeah.
I've listened to this record a lot and never really thought about the overhead plane and the tie between the instrumentals.
Yeah.
It's really pretty cool. We do this, it's different, but it's the same, which is we do news program here in NPR. And one of the things I did for 19 years is I play instrumental music in between news stories to both sort of glue the story together if they're really different, or to give you a moment of just thinking. But again, not mute. It's not dead silence.
Yeah.
But it gives you a place to take your thoughts from some maybe heavy story beforehand. And then get you
can
think
actually
about
have time
it,
to think
digest
about
it.
Says straight into something
right,
else that
exactly.
you're expected to digest as
so
well.
We call them buttons because they kind of button, you know, they kind of put hold things together, you know, in the way buttons do.
We
call those buttons.
I start calling mine buttons.
There you go.
Yeah.
How about if I just play what would come out of that button? I'll play a little of Oh Brother from you, and then I want you to come back and pick one song, maybe that's something now that's exciting you.
Okay.
And then, this is great. Here we go. Here's Oh Brother coming out of If Everyone Is Someone, No One Is Everyone, which was the button before.
Thank you.
words to a brother? What are they? What's the story they're telling? Or the mood they're conveying?
It's kind of... It's... Well, the story for me is I wrote that song whenever... Me and my family have always been very tight. And specifically me and my elder brother. And in the time I was writing that, my brother had kind of like... I don't know, I guess things were all right for me because from early on enough, I kind of knew what I was doing and I was really, really motivated to do it, and I was really lucky that things went my way, and he's an incredible artist, and, you know, and it's taken him a little while to figure out what he wants to do. And at that point, he was just like, he was in a state of like, I'm so confused and I don't know, paralysis kind of. And I don't know, we weren't that close at the time, and it was kind of, there was a lot of stuff going on. My parents were splitting up, and things just all overall felt like everything was just really bad. So that's when I kind of went to my basement, and I was writing a lot in my basement because I could be a lot as loud as I wanted there, and I could play everything as up as I wanted it to. And I wrote that song as a way of kind of like, saying even though as far removed as you can be from someone, you still need them, and even though you don't want to, like you that's how you feel. And the song I wrote is just like, I need you to be there, and also kind of like, I wish, like, pretend we are who we used to be before we forgot how to dream. And that's kind of like when we were younger and before things are the way they are now. So that's what that's about.
Wow. And finding your voice. When did you find that voice of yours?
Originally, just as a way to sing the lyrics. Uh-huh. And it wasn't like any kind of... I mean, I did some choir things in school, but that was to get out of class. So. And I was in choirs since like primary school and stuff. But I guess when I was... Around the time I wrote Sea Creatures, when I was like 14, that's when I was just writing a lot of songs and singing the lyrics that I was... I don't know, it was just how I was expressing everything and how I was saying everything to my parents without, you know, because I always have and still do feel awkward having, you know, big conversations in any sort of depth with my parents and my brothers sometimes as well. So that was just how I was saying absolutely everything, was just to do a little demo. And
do they react to your music? I mean, especially because they are in it.
Yeah, I mean... When I remember when I first showed my parents my songs, and they were just like, did you write that, or where did you get the lyrics? Like, there's no way you wrote that. And I was like, no, I can show you my notes and my demos, and I can play it. And they were just like, whoa. Because I've kept it very private. And I was really dyslexic as a kid, so I, you know, they never thought I was going to, like, read and write very well at all. But I worked on that quite a lot, and... I guess it was quite a shock to them when I came through and was like, I've just written all this. And they were just like...
They must have been shocked and proud at the same time.
I guess so, yeah. Also concerned, though, because I was writing some pretty depthy things that I was never saying before. Uh-huh. So I think they kind of... I'd probably scared them a bit as well.
Yeah.
But that's what I've always done. And I think over the years, like, there's definitely been songs where... I mean, I've never went to my parents and been like, what do you think of this song? Because they know I mean, they know it's what I do and it's how I say things, and I'm just going to do it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how I'd feel if someone was writing about me in that way either, but I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, they know it's honesty, and I'm not trying to say anything like it isn't. So, yeah.
It's kind of beautiful. Is there someone these days that touches you, that you want to play music of, something contemporary?
Yeah. Recently, and from suggestion by Tommy, there's this band called The Blue Nile, and the main guy from The Blue Nile, who I guess writes songs and stuff, is a guy called Paul Buchanan.
Blue Nile is a Scottish band, yeah.
And the main guy from that is a guy called Paul Buchanan, and he did a solo record, I think the record's called Mid-Air. And I actually stumbled across Mid-Air from a movie, about, I don't even know, like, a guy could travel in time, and it's a pretty good movie. But and I looked up the song and I realised that was Paul Buchanan, and I made the connection between the bands, and it's at the moment one of my favourite records. Both Hats by The Blue Nile, and
what's the name of the Blue Nile record?
I think it's called Hats.
Hats.
Yeah. And the Paul Buchanan record itself is just incredible. It is the most simplistic, like it's piano and vocal, and that's all it requires. This song is called The Cars Are in the Garden Now, and it's just lyrically, like, incredible.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck on the tour. And
thank you
very bet you more and more you're going to have full houses. And I'm guaranteeing
so.
You when you come back again, you probably come back with a band, though.
Hopefully.
It's lovely to hear you solo. I bet you're going to sell out every place you play.
I hope so. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers.
Bridie Mons Watson, best known as Soak. Her debut album is called Before We Forgot How to Dream. You can hear all the songs we played today in full at the All Songs Considered website. For NPR Music, it's All Songs Considered.
Later when you told me about this, I was confused, I was upset, and all I needed was a kiss. One day I will bow my head, all the gray, all the rain, and think of all the lives I led today. The cars are in the garden now. The cars are in the garden now. The cars are in the garden now. Cars are in the garden now. Take me to a crossroad. Give me all the meaning that you've got. And watch the traffic gridlocking all the way from 8 o'clock. The cars are in the garden. Cars are in the garden now. The stars are underneath the plow. The cars are in the garden now. When you wake me up and say all the love the others gave me, one day I find a place that we forgot. The toys are in the garden now. The guards are in the garden now. The cars are